You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with the Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. And you've just been listening to Hot Texas, the Hot Texas Swing Band.
Yes, and we thank Alex Dormont for that music that opens and closes the show every week. And you are listening to episode 183. This is the first episode of May 2026, and kicking off the show, honey,
have Henry Clark.
Yeah, but you're not going to tell us yet, because first you have to tell us where we're broadcasting from.
And for the scripture.
Yeah, where are we broadcasting? I'm so excited. I can't stay on outline. Where are we broadcasting from tonight?
Well, I tell you, it's March the 27th, 1915, and we were in Stroud, Oklahoma. We're going to do a story on Oklahoma bank robberies. There are two banks here, and everything is peaceful. Wait, I just saw a group of armed men heading for the First National Bank, and wow, another group heading for the Stroud National Bank. One of the men looks like Henry Starr, the bank robber. Bobby, it doesn't look like a good day for Stroud.
Do you think that Henry Starr knows we're going to be talking about him tonight?
I don't know if he does or not, but I think we better take cover.
Jim, who are our guests tonight?
Henry Park, film editor of True West Magazine.
Hello, Henry.
Hello.
We're delighted you're with us tonight. And I don't think you're in Oklahoma. Where are you?
No, I almost said Brooklyn out of habit, but I'm in Los Angeles.
Delighted to have you. And who's our other guest?
Let's meet our featured guest, Mark Archuleta.
Hey. Howdy, everybody.
And I don't think Mark's in Oklahoma either. I think he's probably been there. Mark, where are you tonight?
I am in a little mountain town called Green Valley. It's in California. And anyone who's ever heard of Magic Mountain Amusement Park, I'm about 30 miles north of there. And all we have here are coyotes.
Yeah, are coyotes. Or if you've heard of where we come from, Santa Clarita, California. That's right in our old stomping grounds, isn't it, Mark?
That's right.
And you know, we just found out that right now, and maybe for a little while, Henry is in LA. So you two better get out your daytimers and figure out when you can grab a cup of coffee together or something, right?
Or something stronger.
Yeah, or something stronger. So tonight we're going to be talking with Mark in depth about his newest book, The Real Thrilling Events of Bank Robber Henry Starr, From Gentleman Bandit to Movie Stardom and Back. And to be starting us off this evening, we're going to talk with our good friend, Henry C. Park, the author of The Greatest Westerns Ever Made and The People Who Made Them. And Henry, in this month's True West Magazine,
oh my God,
we have more post notes. I think we have a post note on almost every page. Henry is also the film editor of True West Magazine. Our newest copy just arrived. Honey, this is the March?
May and June. We just got it yesterday.
And Henry, you have the cover story. And I'll try to hold this up a little better to the camera. Who's the cover story about?
Robert Duvall.
Yeah.
All about his playing Gus McRae in Lonesome Dove.
Yeah.
And great article.
It's a great article. And did you interview him more than once?
No, only once. But it was, I'm happy to say, it was a very long interview. it was supposed to be 20 minutes. And I think we talked for an hour and a half because he luckily liked my question.
Oh, my goodness. And besides that article, we're just gushing because we love this magazine. And it's our go-to for all kinds of information. So, Jim, what was the other thing that we wanted to talk to him about?
Let's see. I have to get a look. I have to get my hands on these little post-it notes.
The post-it note, is on Henry's
book. We have a review here on...
yes, Henry's book, and it sits right next to...
Stuart Roseberg did this blurb on your book.
Okay, so I'm trying to hold up. So this is a review that Henry wrote... this one, Mezcal. Yeah, Mezcal movie set. Tell us tell us a little bit about that book, Henry.
Well, it's a very detailed history of the Western movie town of Mezcal, which is owned or at least was built by the same people who run the more famous Old Tucson Western movie town. And It's the details are fascinating. I mean, if they're discussing a movie that was shot there, you're going to learn not only about the actual filming of it, but the history of the novel that it was based on and the facts behind the novel and so on. It's really in-depth and beautifully detailed, very entertaining stuff.
So we should have this author on with us. Don't you think?
I think that would be an excellent idea.
All right. We'll see if we can set that up. And great. Then you also did an article, and our friend Julie Pamilia is right there in the picture.
You did an article,
Cowboys History in Hollywood.
Right.
At the Reagan Library.
Yeah. Tell us about that one.
Okay. That's a wonderful show they had at the Reagan Library of fictional and real cowboys, with a special look at cowboy presidents, including Teddy Roosevelt and Ronald Reagan. It's a great show. It closed there. So it is now, I'm trying to remember I've got my post-it in my copy too.
Yeah.
It closed about a week and a half ago.
Cause we were there.
We were there the last Friday.
Friday morning of closing weekend. And let's see. Where does it go?
It's going to be in the Mulva Cultural Center in De Pere, Wisconsin. It opens in June. I don't know the exact date. Mm-hmm.
And you remember when you went through, what was do you remember the final vignette as you exit? Who's there in the final exhibition?
Three of my favorite Westerners, Trigger, Bullet, and Buttermilk.
And there was a huge group around that as we were, leaving. And we're very familiar with them. We didn't need to read label copy or anything. But there was one of the docents was very engaged with a large group of people. And it was so fun because they were each wanting to tell their story, all kinds of stories about Trigger and Buttermilk and Bullet. That was for me almost one of the most fun parts of the exhibition was hearing people interact with their memories,
Right.
Okay, let's see. And then were we going to talk about this one now or are we going to do that in a minute?
Okay. We can just point that one out.
Okay.
Because we're going to get into the book. But this is Stuart Rosebrook's little review of Henry Starr, the bank robber.
Yes. I'm trying to, get my fingers on. I'm not Vanna White, as I often say. So this is like a picture of Mark's book. Yes. It has a fascinating, wonderful review. Written by Stuart Rosebrook, and congratulations, Mark. And I know I told you I was going to take a screenshot or type it out for you, and I will do that tonight because you probably haven't gone out and gotten an issue of this yet.
I haven't gotten my issue yet. I'm looking forward to seeing
it. I will send that to you. So, Henry.
Yes.
It's roundup time. Take it away.
All right. I will be happy to do that. Some very big Western news broke this morning, exclusive to Deadline Hollywood, in an article by Justin Kroll. Teton Ridge Entertainment has acquired the remake rights to High Noon from Karen Sharp Kramer, the widow of producer Stanley Kramer, and from other rights holders. Mrs. Kramer said, quote, "Over the years, I've received many offers for High Noon, but I've waited for a partner that truly understands its legacy, values, and eternal themes. My husband believed in the power of stories to challenge us to stand up for what's right. Teton Ridge Entertainment shares that belief and recognizes that this story is as relevant today as it was in 1952. I have tremendous respect for how they are breathing new life into the Western, a genre that sits at the very foundation of American storytelling. I'm excited to work with them as a creative collaborator to help bring this timeless story to a new generation." Unquote.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
That's pretty exciting.
Oh my goodness, exciting. Henry. Wow.
Now, with this audience, I assume I don't have to give you a plot summary of High Noon. And when Kramer speaks about breathing new life into the Western, Teton Ridge, which was not a company I was familiar with, has also recently acquired the intellectual property rights to the Lonesome Dove franchise and to the life rights of John Wayne.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm. Oh, now, by the way, does anyone know who, other than Gary Cooper, played the character of Will Kane?
Oh. Lee Rogers.
Do you know, Mark?
It's a $6 million man.
Yes, Lee Majors. That's
Lee
right.
Majors.
All right.
Good job. Yeah. In 1980, the TV sequel High Noon Part 2, The Return of Will Kane, starred Lee Majors with David Carradine as his nemesis and was written by Elmore Leonard.
Okay.
And in 2000, there was a TV remake of the original starring Tom Skerritt as Kane, the late Michael Madsen as Frank Miller, the outlaw who comes to town looking for Kane, and the Lon Chaney Jr. role of the retired lawman was played by Dennis Weaver.
Mm.
Great. Oh, my.
Great
cast. Oh, my.
Chester.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, one of the most intriguing bits of Western news slipped out pretty much unnoticed in March at the South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin. Director Steven Spielberg, there to discuss his new sci-fi film Disclosure Day, which will be in theaters June 12th, confirmed that he has a Western film in the works. He was more than a little cagey about it. He said, quote, "I can't reveal anything right now, but that I've got something in development right now, and it kicks ass," unquote.
Oh, my gosh. Is it going to be an outer space one? Is it going to be, you know, cowboys in space?
Oh, gosh. I hope it's not like the third Indiana Jones movie. Or is it the fourth?
No.
Now, this will be Steven Spielberg's first time directing a Western, but does anyone remember when he produced one?
He didn't do news. He didn't do, tell us.
No, well, it was in 2005 miniseries Into the West.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I actually remember that. Okay.
Right. It was a huge deal at the time, and it's well worth catching. One interesting aspect, because the story takes place over a long period of time, is that more than one actor played major roles. Zahn McLaren, Joe Leaphorn on Dark Winds, plays young Running Fox, and Russell Means, who played Chingachgook in Last of the Mohicans, plays older Running Fox.
And
Michael Spears, who has a great role in 1923 as Runs His Horse, plays young Dog Star in Into the West, and Gil Birmingham, who's Thomas Rainwater of Yellowstone, plays older Dog Star.
We'll need to find that. We'll need to find that.
It is available. It is streaming through Amazon, but I don't think it's directly from them. I think it's linked to somebody, but I checked that.
I think we have to find that. Yeah.
Oh, and please check out the May-June issue of True West. You may find other magazines featuring Robert Duvall, but there's only one with my name, Henry C. Park, on the cover. And that's True West. Well, you know, seriously, it's, as we were saying before, it's a look at Duvall's unforgettable portrait of Gus McCrae in Lonesome Dove. Mm. And in addition to interviewing Duvall at length, I also spoke to his co-stars Diane Lane, Ricky Schroeder, director Simon Windsor, and just recently to Barry Corbin and D.B. Sweeney. Posted new Henry's Western Roundup, you can read my interview with director Alex Cox about his new Western, Dead Souls. And you can read all about this and so much more at Henry's Western Roundup.blogspot.com.
All right.
So Henry, can I give you a scoop? I don't know if we got to go to break, but I got a scoop for you.
No, we will not break for a scoop. Go ahead.
So you mentioned Zahn McLarnon of Dark Winds, and he and I and his agent, Gloria Hinojosa, are developing this Henry Starr project to be a limited series. And he would be playing the lead of Henry Starr.
Oh man, that is perfect. I can immediately see him as Henry Starr. That's great.
Yeah,
so this is hot off the press, right?
Like you That's heard right. it here first.
That's outstanding. And he is such a good guy. He was on the first time I was ever on the set of a Western, he was in it, which was a film called Yellow Rock, which is going back like 12, 13 years ago. And you just watched him for like 2 minutes on the screen and you knew there was something terribly special there. So I'm just so glad how well he's done. This is wonderful news.
Oh, what wonderful news.
Well, maybe it make your roundup.
I will have to update it.
You need to get together. You need to get together.
Yes, we do.
You need to get together. Yeah. Well, let's see. We are going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we're shifting gears a bit because it's all about Mark and Henry Starr, that is. Are you a writer? Our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, are standing by to assist you. And here's a special offer created just for you. And we took advantage of it. When you come back, we'll be talking in depth. We'll be taking an in-depth look at award-winning Mark Archuleta's book, The Real Thrilling Events of Henry Starr. It's a long title. From to movie star and back again. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Authors, welcome home. Every author needs a website, a home base for their brand. Professionally showcase your books and brand with a custom website landing page, starting at $369. Bluebookshelf.com. It's a great feeling to be home. Contact the Blue Cottage team today to get started.
Welcome back to Running with the Writer. We're talking with Henry Park and Mark Archuleta.
Yeah, we are. Yes, we
are. We got two Henrys.
Two Henrys, and they're both stars. Mark, before we introduce you, we'd love to just say a congratulations on your recent award. Western Writers of America named this book the 2026 Best Biography, and we're so excited for you. I'd love to know, what did you think and how did you hear the news?
So I was at the Tucson Festival of Books. I was a presenting author there. And on the panel, the moderator was Stuart Rosebrook, who is also the same person who wrote the review in the current True West magazine. I hadn't met him before. Very nice man. And he made the announcement to the crowd. And it was just so amazing. You know, there's so many terrific authors out there and so many terrific life stories. And the fact that you know, the most prestigious Western Writers Association selected my book is really just a tremendous honor.
Yeah. And they do. That is the annual unveiling of the awards are at that Tucson Festival in the morning. That's when, you know, all of us learn that. So that's so cool that you were there. That's very cool.
and so the presentation is going to be at their convention in St. Louis in June. So I'll get my little plaque with the spur on it. So I'm very excited about that.
Yes. You will have a wonderful time. This is the first year in three that we've been to the previous three. And the one in Tulsa, especially since as we read this book, Tulsa comes up, you know, over and over again.
I wish I'd been there for that.
You would have really enjoyed that one. But you're going to have the best time, and everybody's going to be looking forward to chatting with you. So be ready to not get any sleep and a lot of people have a lot of business cards and a lot of bookmarks or whatever. Go with something that you can pass out to people.
I will do it. I'll do it. Good advice.
Yes, we've learned that. All right, Jim, tell us a little bit about our guest, Mark Archuleta.
Yeah, I almost felt I needed to make a little update here to your biography, considering the news you just told me. But we're going to read it the way it is.
Okay.
Mark is an Emmy-winning screenwriter, journalist, and performer, a fifth-generation Coloradoan of Spanish Basque descent. He grew up steeped in the history of the American West and the colorful characters who inhabited it. Mark loves exploring how fictional fact is refracted through the prism of film and TV. I had to think about that line a little
And then he talked about it, and then I told him, and then
there,
he was like, "Oh, I get
Mark. I
it."
thought I was going to go back to my high school physics and figure it
Prism and refracted, but brilliantly done, brilliantly done, right? Henry Park,
Yes.
really done how he does that. Go ahead.
In 2017, the Wild Bunch Film Festival awarded The Outlaw, Henry Starr, written by Mark Archuleta, Best Modern Western Screenplay. Mark continues to seek financing to film the life of the story of Henry Starr. He's considering robbing a bank.
Okay, I can laugh at my own joke there.
Absolutely. We laughed when we read it in the book. So, there you go. So, Henry Park, do you have any comments or questions you'd just love to get out to our guest right away? I know you've been reading the book as we did.
Of course, you haven't told that much about it yet, so but I'll just jump in with something. I
Okay,
find it
jump in.
fascinating that in 1915, Henry Starr was so incredibly media savvy that I mean, there were people who came along that used the press, criminals. I'm thinking of well, everyone from Jack the Ripper to Bonnie and Clyde, with Bonnie Parker writing her poems and sending them to the press. But I never heard of anyone before Henry Starr who not only publicized himself, but planted false clues about himself. How did he come up with this? What was the background that made his brain work that way?
Well, he was a celebrity really at the age of 19. And you can see over my shoulder that he had his own dime novel series.
Right.
He was the only outlaw to headline his own series other than Jesse James. So at 19, he was already at that level where people knew his name and, knew his reputation. He was, and so at 19, he has his own dime novel. At 20, he's sentenced to hang twice.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, Judge Parker, yeah.
by Judge Parker. So thank goodness, that didn't happen so he could continue to use his media savvy. When he's in the Colorado State Penitentiary, he writes his autobiography and he actually publishes his own autobiography again, using the publicity, as you say, and he was already famous. The thing about the autobiography, which is this book right here,
There you go.
it's
Yeah,
kind of
yeah, yeah.
going in and out, but it's called the Thrilling Events, Life of Henry Starr, and that's why mine's the real, like movie reel thrilling events. It's that prism thing. But so he had the book, but the thing about the autobiography was he hadn't even done the greatest things yet. He hadn't even done the double bank robbery at Stroud. He hadn't become a movie star when he wrote that book. And at the end of the book, of course, he says he's completely reformed. And we know that Completely not true. But yeah, he but he was so charismatic, you know, that he had relationships with newspaper men and police officers and just about everybody. So yeah, when he was had his little crime bungalow in Tulsa, you know, he would drop hints to the newspapers that he had fled to South America, like, you know, famously like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid did. And he would always drop those nuggets, you know, to keep people guessing and never knowing where he was. And then, of course, the motion picture industry comes out and wow, that's, you know, the motion picture industry was the new Wild West. And he was savvy enough to take advantage of it, like you say.
Right. Yeah. I assume that with the Log Cabin Library, he was not paid, was he? Be the subject of those books, whereas when he gets to the screen, he actually gets money.
Yeah, he gets money. Well, the funny thing about the dime novel is you can't really see it, but on the picture, he has like a whiplash mustache. So they didn't even know what he looked like, right? Or if they did, they didn't care. And the story only somewhat factual, but it's completely entertaining. It's so entertaining. He's funny and clever and witty, and actually a lot of the things that he was in real life, they captured in that dime novel.
Yeah.
You know, he had a couple questions. He did have a lot of charm. It's kind of amazing that he negotiates with Teddy Roosevelt, who was president at the time. Says, I'll be good. I won't do this anymore. And Roosevelt says, okay, we'll see what you get pardoned.
Yeah.
That didn't last very long, did it?
A little like Billy the Kid, he seemed to just be popular. The people that knew him, just, you know, he was not a thug. He was not a drunkard. He was not a bully. You know, he was a gentleman bandit. I mean, he was a nice guy, wasn't he? People loved him. It knew him.
So I was going to say, you know, that he does have a bad reputation among a lot of people that would like to have seen him hung, and said the world would have been better off if that had happened. But those were always people that had never met him. And the people who knew him personally were just, like I said before, charmed by his intelligence. He was an autodidact. He actually had to quit school when he was in elementary school because his father died and he had to go to work and support the family. But he always spent the time in prison educating himself. He actually qualified as a lawyer. Very bright, knew history, would quote history all the time. And so people just found him really fascinating and interesting and thoughtful. So the people who didn't ever meet him didn't like him. Those who did loved him.
Yeah. So, Mark,
yes.
When did you meet Henry Starr? And how is it that you became passionately involved with the telling of his life?
So this was probably around 1990, and I was in Crown Books when they used to have Crown Books stores.
Yeah.
And this was the one in Burbank. Yeah. And I'm looking through the bargain bin basket of they have. And that's where I found this.
Okay.
And I started looking through this and I said, well, you know, I was an actor and I was looking for projects to develop for myself. And I said, well, hey, this guy kind of looks like me. And I'm going through this and I'm going, wait, he was sentenced to hang twice. And then Teddy Roosevelt commutes his sentence. And then I find out later that he became a motion picture star. I said, this is a movie. And so I spent the next, you know, 30 years trying to get a movie made and basically rescue him from the bargain bin of history, right?
That's a good one.
And let everybody know his amazing story.
Yeah. You mentioned a minute ago, we talked about the dime novel. And we also talked about how you tell a story. What was it? Refracted prism. You know, how you bring everything together.
Yeah.
And I found reading the book and Henry Park, Henry P. You can jump in here, but as a reader, I found that I said to you the other night, it's like a 9-course meal. It's so rich. There's so much that you cover. It's not just that we're following Henry along and he does this and he does that and he meets this person and he's in prison. It's that you also bring in the social economic, like what's going on, what's happening with the development of the movie industry. What's happening with, he's partly Cherokee. You get into whitewashing, you get into even in film, you know, blackface, and you bring up a lot of things that become the seeds for which we later see develop into riots in different parts of the country, including in Tulsa. And you're using Henry's story as a, because his life touches all of these things that are happening, aren't they? And yes, he's robbing banks and he's still on horseback, even though the automobile is beginning to, you know, is beginning to come in. One of the things that so struck me that I had no idea about was censorship and the Comstock Act. Yeah. And you say that killed the dime novel. Now, I've heard about dime novels all of my years hanging around with Western writers and Western museums and dime novels. I never really thought about what made them die. I figured, oh, people started reading magazines or newspapers, or they were now buying books. You know, there was just something that came along that replaced it. I didn't know. Tell us about the Comstock Act briefly, if you don't mind. I think it's important.
Yeah, so the Comstock Act passed in 1873. That's was the same year that Henry Starr was born. That's how old this is. And if you've been reading the news, you'll see that even today, they are trying to use the Comstock Act. The Comstock Act was named after Anthony Comstock, who was a lackey for J.P. Morgan, who went to Washington, D.C. with a valise full of money to influence lawmakers that there was all this, all these terrible things happening that needed to be curtailed, you know, in terms of you know, what they would consider pornography. And so this was just a moral thing. And what they would do was control the post office. And the post office would control who got second class postage, which was what dime novels were. Part of this moral backdrop was that dime novels were corrupting the youth of America. And pretty much whenever there's a new form of entertainment, somebody wants to control it. And Anthony Comstock was behind it. He eventually partners up with the Women's Christian Temperance Union, who had their own division of vice, right? And together, they decided that they were going to pressure these publishers. There were two main publishers of dime novels, which was Toosey, Frank Toosey, and Street and Smith. And they were publishing the mostly like Frank and Jesse James, right? Mm-hmm. Later would produce the Henry Starr series. And they pressured them saying, you will lose your right to be able to mail these out if you don't stop producing them. Wow. Toosey says, okay, I'll break all the print. I'll do everything I can. But that really wasn't good enough. They wanted to shut them down. And by 1903, they were out of existence.
That's to me, that was just fascinating. And already the censorship with movies when they were so young. Again, that's why we read. Readers, that's why we read, right? we're looking to not only be entertained, but we want to learn things as we go. Right, Henry? Isn't that why we read?
That's right. We want to improve our minds.
Yeah. I know you've got a question.
I was thinking, you know, we talk about these bank robbers. A lot of them knew each other. They were like, kind of like friends. I guess as long as you didn't get in each other's territory, they got along fine. But I was kind of amazed how the bank robbers took the movies. You kind of like duck to water, you know?
Well, I think that the so this is kind of interesting. You know, Henry Starr arrived in this just narrow window of film history where a outlaw could become a movie star, and marshals could become film directors and producers. Because shortly before
Amazing.
him, so just to give you an idea, Jesse James died when Henry Starr was about 9 years old. But when Frank James and Cole Younger were old men in their 50s, seems like young men to me now, but were old men in their 50s, they came out and there was no such thing as motion pictures. So what they did was they created the great Cole Younger Frank James Traveling Wild West show. Right. And so they toured the country and they capitalized on their fame, but they were too early for motion pictures. And then later you have like John Dillinger, Bonnie and Clyde, Pretty Boy Floyd, who by that time, like Dillinger was killed in 1934 at the Biograph Theater watching Clark Gable play a gangster. That era of an outlaw being able to play themselves was gone. The movie industry was way too sophisticated. And so there was just this narrow window where not only Henry Starr, but two other outlaws that I talk about in the book, Al Jennings and Emmett Dalton, who was the last surviving member of the Dalton gang, became movie star and producers. And then you had Tin Star, what I call the Tin Star filmmakers, which was John Abernathy, who was a marshal, Marshal Bill Tillman, and Deputy Marshal P.S. McGeaney, who ends up becoming the director of Henry Starr's film. And they met as 19-year-olds when Henry Starr put a gun in P.S. McGeaney's chest when he was trying to rob the train. So
Yeah,
it came around full circle that
it's
they
like
meet again.
it's surreal. So he is the number one bank robber. He robbed more banks than anybody else, correct?
Right.
So
On his
why,
tombstone.
and this will be our last question before we just take another little break, but why does his name not roll off our lips when we're thinking of those, outlaws,
Famous old-time
famous
outlaws.
old-time stagecoach robbers, bank robbers? That why do we
Yeah,
not
well,
know him?
when I mentioned Henry Starr, people have heard of Belle Starr, which was his cousin by marriage. She had married his cousin and then became a star. But she's more famous than he is. But the reason is because he was not a bloodthirsty outlaw. No one was killed in the commission of one of his crimes or bank robberies. And he made it a point to try to keep everyone safe. And I think that if he had been more deadly, left a trail of bodies, either civilians or police officers like Bonnie and Clyde and Dillinger and those sort, that he would have been more notorious. But because he was a gentleman bandit, people, don't remember his name as much until now.
Until now. Henry, before we slip to a quick break, do you have a comment or a question for Mark?
Well, I'm just fascinated by the idea that Henry Starr and Al Jennings and Emmett Dalton all knew each other, which and all went on
Exactly.
to do it. And I'm amazed that I just was looking him up and saw that Al Jennings lived into the 1960s.
Yeah, he's buried out here in LA. He lived to like I think he was 97 years old and was still kind of active in the entertainment industry. He actually sued the Lone Ranger because they
Really?
used his name and he was mad that they
I
used it
remember reading
incorrectly.
that. I
So he's,
remember,
oh, wow.
yeah,
He sued.
I
I bet they
read.
assumed he was dead and
Yeah,
But
he can't still be
I
alive.
just by chance watched him in a Tex Ritter B Western a few days ago where he played the judge.
Oh,
Oh my
interesting.
gosh.
Yeah, and he was like a technical advisor, like on the Oklahoman with James Cagney and Humphrey Bogart. Okay. You know, he made most of his career as a technical advisor in later years. Had a long career.
We're going to step away for just a moment to tell you about one of the places that you can order the books we're talking about tonight, as well as many of our author guests that we have. And you can find their books on our Out West Shop affiliate page at bookshop.org. And that's a wonderful way to support our program. And you can, we're going to find out a little bit more about the Gentleman Bandit when we come back. Don't go.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking with Henry Park and Mark Arceletta. You know, we might need to talk about characters for a second.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, as we've all mentioned already, how they knew each other. It seemed like all these bandits, you know, went in the same circles to some degree. And I think if we get old Henry here, and we talk about Jennings.
Oh, Henry.
And we know those two guys met up in the Ohio State prison. And Ohio State Penitentiary in Columbus, and got to thinking, you know, I hadn't thought about it that much. I thought Ohio State prison was really just for prisoners from Ohio. Didn't know it was like a regional across the country prison. You know, I used to live in Columbus, and I used to drive by that place all the time.
He was never there, though.
I didn't spend his night inside, though.
No.
Don't go down.
But I think it was kind of just interesting all met together. What did you want to talk about,
well,
O. Henry?
It was interesting to me that he knew O. Henry, and I wondered if you take a moment. That'll be a name a lot of listeners will be familiar with. What was their relationship? How that came
out? Well, it's kind of funny because Henry was talking about how all these guys knew each other. And surprisingly, the Ohio State Penitentiary was kind of an artist colony. You know, at the same time that Henry Starr was there, of course, Al Jennings was there. But also, O. Henry, who's the most famous short story writer, was also in the Ohio State Penitentiary for embezzlement. And strangely, Al Jennings and O. Henry knew each other before the Ohio State Penitentiary because both of them were in Honduras hiding from the law.
Oh, my goodness.
And they got involved with a revolution there. They knew each other. They both get caught. They both end up in the Ohio State Penitentiary. And Al Jennings says, hey, you know what? I used to rob banks. I got this great story. And O. Henry says, oh, you know, I'll polish it up for you. And it became a story that was one of O. Henry's short stories. Then later, Al Jennings is discovered by a writer who serializes Al Jennings' life story in the Saturday Evening Post. And so Al Jennings becomes more and more famous. He had a book called Beating Back. And eventually, Marshall Bill Tillman and Al Jennings start pitching the book to movie companies to make a filmed version. They went to Tannhauser. Tannhauser says, yeah, let's do it. And they cut Tillman out of the deal. And they made the movie without Tillman. So then Tillman forms the Anti-Outlaw Film Corporation, with Nick. So it starts spinning into this thing where you have not only did you have outlaws fighting on the range with lawmen, but now they're fighting in the film industry.
Well, we've been talking tonight, and I am looking at time. We've been talking with Henry Park and with Mark Archuleta. And Mark, this book is a wonderful read, and it is just full of characters. We were making a list. It's not just a list of names. Every character you talk about had a major impact in some way in this time period. Yeah. And so, dear readers, you will enjoy following Henry Starr through all of his escapades, his thrilling events, and all of the people that he meets, because it is like a who's who of this time period. Mark, where can people get the book? What, where can they find you and follow you?
So you mentioned your sponsor, bookshop.org, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That's a great place. Wherever I go, I really try to promote independent bookstores, small bookstore owners. You can get my book. It's published by the University of North Texas Press. It's not self-published. So it's really easy to find. Anybody can get it for you. It's also on all the big real retailers that everyone knows about that don't need a plug from me, but you can get them there. You can follow me on Instagram. It's Henry Starr, Outlaw Henry Starr, Facebook. You can write me at info@henrystarrbook.com. I love to hear from people, especially if you've read the book and you point out typos. That's just fine with me. And I just want to mention that there are so many photos in this book that have never been seen before, especially the ones for the motion picture, which is lost to history, but we recreate it in the book as if it were on the screen for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And what do you have coming up next, quickly?
So, well, I mentioned trying to get this into a limited series with Zahn McLarnon. I am also voicing the audiobook, and I know a lot of people really like audiobooks, and so that'll be an option for you, having me actually read it to you as if we're just best friends.
That's the way. There it is.
We're around the campfire.
Yeah. Henry, where can people find you, follow you, and get your book?
Well, they can get my book from wonderful booksellers like yourselves. Lesser booksellers also sell it. They can go there if they want.
Yeah.
You can find me roaming aimlessly, but you can find my writings in True West magazine every issue. And, of course, my blog, Henry's Western Roundup. Where I'm going to be updating a recent column because I have a new scoop that I won't tell you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You
but have you got Zahn's phone number? No, never mind.
Well, and Henry,
I have his agent's number.
Oh, good.
There you go.
So, Henry, you and us, what we have together next is a month from tonight. It'll kick off June 4th. We have Kirk Ellis joining us to talk about his new book, They Kill People, Bonnie and Clyde, A Hollywood Revolution and America's Obsession with Guns and Outlaws. We are so excited to have Kirk joining us. This book is just hot off the press. It's getting tremendous coverage. And Henry, he's going to be with us.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's also reviewed in that same
yes. We have it marked. I'm so glad that you look at that. See, that's why you want this magazine, because anything and everything you need to know about is right here. There you go.
If you're looking for great literature, it's the place to go.
Jim, we have a quote.
We'll shoot this in real quick.
Go ahead.
This is from the book, Henry Starr. And the Tulsa police captain by the name of George Blaine spotted Starr. He's leaning against the side of the Security State Bank building. He thought nothing about it until 30 minutes later, he passed Starr again, and Starr's leaning against the National Bank of Commerce building down the street. He says to Henry, which of these two banks are you planning to make? He asks. Stars smiled. No, I'm off that stuff for good. No more bank robberies for me. Well, Stars one time vowed that he'd gone straight and beat back was now an outright lie. Star bemoaned the heavy automobile traffic along Main and Second Streets. He says, there was a time when it was really easy, Star said. Just a little gunplay and a little rough talk and the money was yours.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for reading that.
We want to say a quick thank you to our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, Alex Dormont and the Hot Texas Swing Band, Sam Hassan, the engineer, producer, and owner of LA Talk Radio. Next week, join us for another Full House. Returning author Jeff Crawford is with us. And the Nick Whale, the CEO of Dusty Saddle Publishing, will be with us. And we'll be talking about Jeff's two newest books, including the newest of America 250 series, Tom Horn, Setting Cheyenne Back to Right. We're very excited to start reading these. Jeff, if you're watching, we'll be ready. And No Prize Above the Truth, part of his Ezra Whitehall story series. So join us again next week for another rendezvous. And do you have a parting call?
And as we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing.
And we'll keep reading.
We'll keep reading. See you down the trail. See you next week.
Thanks, folks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Happy trail.
Thank you.
Yeah. Happy trail.